to forget about Ben and Jerry's.
As long as it doesn't involve our new prime minister or president, that's fine with me. Okay, welcome back, Jeff Sachs here. Masechet Ta'anit, Web Yeshiva, Mishkan Tzipora, here we go. We're still in the middle of this. It's this perek is, I must say, it's rather light going. It's rather light going. So you can learn the Gemara while still eating your ice cream. There's some Gemaras you can't, you know, it's like there's certain things you can't drive while doing it, and there are other things that you can walk and chew gum at the same time. So you can learn this Gemara while still eating your ice cream. Hazaken shebahem omer lefnehem divrei kibushim. When they gather the people in the Rechavah Shel Ir on the fast days, and they bring out the Aron, you remember what we talked about with the ashes and the whole story? So the Zaken Shebehem, the elder amongst them, would say Divrei Kibushim, different types. He'd give Musar, right? Kibushim means, like pickled. He would pickle their hearts. He would, Rashi says he would, you know, things that would press on the heart. Like a machbesh, right? He would press on the heart, you know, in a way to, or we might say more colloquially in English, he would impress his words onto their hearts, so to stir them to do tshuva. Tanu Rabbanan. So who is this person? Who is this person that should be saying these divrei musar in front of the crowd? Tanu Rabbanan. Im yesh zaken, omer zaken. If there is an elder, I mentioned this when we learned the Mishnah, that when we first moved to the neighborhood, there really weren't too many old people. We were in our 20s, and we were the old people. In most communities, you know, that are around for a while, so all the different age ranges get populated. So you want somebody, an elder, the elder statesman of the community, a person that's respected to get up and do that. So im lav omer chacham. So if there's no elder person to do it, so then a person who's wise should do it. The imlav, and if you don't have an elderly person, and you don't have a wise person, the imlav, omer adam shel tsura. A person, it seems the pshat here is that a person of significant appearance, either a person who's very big. Rashi says that this is not talking about height. That is, it could be that sometimes the tallest person in the room is the most significant. I think they say, is this true that in every presidential election, the taller candidate gets the most votes?
I think that's the case. That's
from the Tanakh, Rabbi Sachs. Shaul
is Mishichma Vamala. Mishichma Vamala, right.
Shmuel is told to choose a new king,
right.
Go to the house of Yishai, and as soon as he sees the Bechor Eliyav, he says, oh, he's tall, he must be the one Hashem wants.
Right.
And Hashem answers him by saying, Al Tabet El Mareu via Goba Komato, Ki Ma'astihu, Ki Ha'adam Yireh La'enayim V'Hashem Yireh La'levav. I think Tsura means stature and not height.
Yes, so that is apparently what Rashi says. Rashi says that to be a Baal Tzura means if you're not the biggest lamdan in the world. Here's the Rashi. Hold on. Oh, David's already answered that question about the height of the presidents. Here, Tzura, here's Rashi. Bal koma sheyishmu'u v'yekablu dvarav. Right? Rashi says he should be tall. Remember, in the ancient world, not even in the pre-modern world, there were no loudspeakers. So, you think about it, I was actually just reading something about the Gettysburg Address. You know, there were many, many, many hundreds of people in Gettysburg the day that Lincoln gave the Gettysburg Address. But at any gathering in the pre-modern world, before there was a sound system, so in any kind of gathering like this, even in the best of acoustics, only the people in the first, couple dozen rows could have possibly heard what somebody was saying, right? You went in order to be present, but there was no assumption that you were necessarily going to hear what the person was, what the person was saying. So Rashi might be saying, quite literally, the tallest, because the tallest will be the loudest, will be able to be head and shoulders above everyone else and project his voice outward. Others, including the Rush, say that no, Baal Tzura is a person of Yehudi. How did you just put it?
Stature,
but not physical stature, but of stature. So, but in other words, the problem is that we already said that. In other words, if he's not has the stature of old age or the stature of wisdom, which stature is this?
He could be the president of the shul, who everyone knows is the person. In fact, I saw one of the parshanim say, "You want a person who everybody respects for their yirat shemayim, for their gemila chasadim, for their masim tovim, right. And a person who really works hard for the community. That's a person of stature."
Right. So that's what the Rush says. So he has some kind of stature, even if it's not the stature of a great Talmid Chacham or the stature of the elder statesman. But he has some stature. He's known as being a lamdin. He's known as being a learned person. The Maharsha says if you don't have a person who's learned in Torah and you don't have a person who's senior, has seniority in age, so then you look for somebody who has, like, let's say, worldly wisdom. Now maybe that's sometimes the communal leader, the lay leader, you know, who's recognized for other things but not for Torah wisdom. But the point is that this is the pecking order of who we assign this job to. Atu zaken de ka'omre afal gav de lav chachamhu. So the Gemara asks, is if you have to choose between a zaken, an elderly person, and a chacham, a Torah scholar, that the zaken takes precedent. Omar Abaye, hachi ka'omar, im yesh zaken v'hu chacham, omer zaken v'hu chacham. So in other words, ideally you have somebody who's the elder statesman who is also wise. V'im lav omer chacham. But if the senior citizen is not recognized for his wisdom, then all things being equal, a person who has the Torah wisdom should be preferred. V'im lav omer adam shel tzura. And then a person, whatever adam shel tzura is, he is the one that should get the next nod. And what does he say? Why am I having such trouble finding things on the screen?
Acheinu.
Acheinu, my fellow Americans, my brothers. Acheinu, so this is the famous drasha that we know about Yonah. A lot of this discussion concerns itself with Yonah. Acheinu, lo sak v'ta'anit gormim. It's not the wearing of sackcloth, and it's not even the fasting, which is the central cause in the achieving of our goal, which is, of course, generally speaking, the bringing of rain. Ela tshuva u'masim tovim gormim. Shekein matzinu b'anshei ninveh shelo ne'mar bahem v'yar ha'elokim et sakam ve'et tanitam. It doesn't say in Yonah that when they were fasting, when Anshei Ninveh were fasting, that Hashem saw their fasting and their sackcloth. Ela v'yar Elokim et ma'aseihem ki shavu midarkam hara'a. It says that Hashem saw that they had done tshuva, and that's what caused his positive response.
I went to the sheriff. The one time I heard a sheriff from the Chama Leibowitz, she discussed. I don't know if she mentioned the Gemara, but she was discussing. It was a sheriff on Yonah, and she was talking about how it was interesting that when the people on their own decided to do tshuva, they did, you know, they wore, you know, the sack, and they fasted and everything. But when the king later made his decree, even though they had been doing it, he added they have to do tshuva because that wasn't their, you know, they didn't think that, they thought it was enough to do the superficial stuff. And she made a parallel between that and Megillah Esther, where the people had a natural reaction to do Mishloach Manot, but Mordechai and Esther added that you have to do Mishloach Manot and you have to do Matan Olamim because it wasn't a natural thing to do that. Sometimes the leadership needs to sort of, even if people are heading the right direction, give them a little more
When did you hear that? How old were you when you heard that cheer? You must have been...
This was in, I think, 92. So yeah, I was about 20. Yeah. Uh-huh. I came with Teretzvi. She came from Sukkot, and it was interesting. She spoke I'm Sukkota by Yonah. And she said, you know, normally you'd think like you speak of what's coming up. But she said, no, I prefer to speak what already happened because you just read it. You know it already. You're not going to like talking something you haven't read yet. So.
Besides, right, the word Sukkah is mentioned.
Because Sukkah, he goes out to the Sukkah.
True. That's true.
Anyway, then there's another pasuk in Yonah. V'yitkasu sakim ha'adam v'habehima. That both man and beast were covered with this sackcloth. My havu avde. So what do they do? What's going on in this? It's a strange thing, the whole thing with the cows. Asra ha-behemat l'chud, v'et havladot l'chud. They separated the cow, the mother cows and the baby cows. Right? They separated. You know, that's like a great distress for both. In other words, the baby cows want to suck. You remember the Gemara says, in the context of teaching Torah, that more than the calf wants to suckle, the mother wants to give milk because it's painful when the udders get filled. That becomes a metaphor for teaching Torah, right? The teacher wants to teach more than the student wants to suckle the Torah up. So the Anshei Ninveh separated the calves from the cows. So Amru lefanav, and they say to Hashem, Ribono shel Olam, im ein ata merachem aleinu, ein anu merachamim aleinu. If you don't have mercy on us, if you don't send us rain, we're going to hold these cows and calves hostage. We won't let the baby cows, you know, drink from the udder. In other words, what does this mean? In other words, on one hand, it sounds like chelm, right? Like, what are they doing? They're going to starve their, you know, they themselves are in trouble. So they're going to starve their cows. But maybe it's a way of saying that, that, you know, you can sometimes force Hashem's hand. Even if we are not worthy of being saved, right? So why should you let these innocent cows suffer. V'yikru'u el ha'elokim b'choska, and they call out to Hashem with a lot of chozek, with a lot of strength. My amur, what did they say? Like, what is it that they said with so much chozek? Amru lefanav, ribono shel alam, aluv v'she'eno aluv, tzadik v'rasha, mi nidche mipnei. The aluv, an aluv is like a, you know, somebody who's very, somebody who's very nebuch. What's the word for this in English? Somebody who's very miserable. Shank. What?
I think the force here is more like a person who's easily shanked. A person who will turn red or blush as soon as somebody says something negative against them. You know, it's just like a pitiful creature, you know.
Yeah, a pitiful.
Basically,
right.
Is easily
looked
upon by the world.
All right. Les Miserables.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah,
Steinfeld has submissive, and intractable.
Submissive and intractable? So, no, you can't be submissive and intractable.
No, eluv, ain't no eluv.
Oh, ain't no eluv is intractable.
Is intractable.
Ah, okay. So in other words, somebody who is submissive... And somebody who isn't submissive, somebody who's intractable, somebody who's a tzaddik, and somebody who's a rasha. So who should yield to whom, right? Who's so? In other words, who's gonna? Do you have a nebuch and you have the bully, right? So who's gonna yield to whom? The nebuch is gonna yield, and the tzaddik is gonna yield. So Hashem, who is Hashem, right? Hashem is the tzaddik, and we're the rasha. So Hashem, you should compromise on our behalf. And grant us tshuva. This is what the Anshei Ninveh, this is how the Gemara understands the strategy of the Anshei Ninveh to Hashem. And then the Pasuk says, V'yashuvu ish midarko hara'a u'min ha'chamas asher bekapehem. The Anshei Ninveh, they did tshuva and they went away from all of the evil and all of the chamas, all of the, let's say chamas means all of the violence that was in their hands. So the Gemara asks, "My umin haChamas asher bekapehem? What is this? What is the Hamas that they had in their possession?" Omar Shmuel, "Afilu gazil marish uvan o bevira mikakeya kol habira kulo umachzir marish lebalav." So we have an idea. It's quite interesting. There is an idea of takanat hashavim. When it comes to hilchot gzela, if you steal something, the only way to do tshuva, aside from recognizing that you've done wrong and vidui and kabbalah ala atid, you have to make compensation. You have to give back what you stole. If you can't give back what you stole, there's a whole variety of different knasot, you know, particularly when it comes to livestock. Because if I stole your sheep and I ate your sheep, I can't return that sheep, obviously. Right? And that's why the Torah puts different knasot where it ends up being even more that you have to give back. Because when you steal a sheep, you're not just stealing, it's not like stealing a brick. If I steal a brick and I give you back a different brick, it's all the same brick. Right? All bricks are identical. But and cash, right? That is, if I steal $100 from you, the value is not in the piece of green paper, right? The value is the abstract value of $100. So if I pay you back with two $50 bills, we're even, Stephen, because you don't have an attachment to that particular piece of paper. It's to the abstract value that's transferred through the currency. But a cow, a sheep, a goat, that's different. Because it's not just the value of the animal right now, it's the value that the animal gives throughout whatever the remainder of its natural life would have been. The work you could have done with it, the milk you would have gotten from it, the wool you would have gotten from it, etc., etc., etc. But the idea that in principle there's no such thing as tshuva without returning the stolen object is obvious. However, Chazal understood in certain cases the obligation to return the object becomes such an impediment to doing tshuva that we're going to let you off the hook of that. So if I steal, I go down to the lumberyard and I steal a beam. A Marish is like a, you know, like a big, you know, think of like a country house. Like a farmer's house, there's always that major beam that goes, you know, from side to side across the top, and usually like they put like pieces of pottery on it or something like that. Right? So it's like the beam that holds up the whole house. If I have to return that beam, it means I have to knock down my house. All of the other beams and boards and bricks and mortar in the house were bought 100% kosher. Except for that one central beam. And in order to return that one beam, I have to destroy my whole home. That becomes a huge disincentive to doing tshuva. So Chazal created the Takanat HaShavim, right? In order to facilitate tshuva, we say, in this case, we don't require you to return the beam, the consequence of which would be tearing down your whole house. Instead, you have to make financial compensation for that beam. You don't have to return the object itself. So the Anshe Nineveh, they went lifnim mishur asadin. They should have torn down their houses that were built with this stolen property, stolen beams and bricks and whatnot, right? And they did. Even though, according to the halacha, I mean, in Nineveh, the Anshe Nineveh weren't asking shailas. But mebechina hilchatit, they could have gotten away with just paying the financial. And instead, they went lifnim mishur asadin and tore down their homes at great expense themselves in order to say, I don't want to live under the same roof with the stolen property. Omar Rav Ada Bar Ahava Odom Sheyesh Biyado Avera Umitvade Ve'eno Chozerba, a person who did an avera, and he does vidui, he claps al chet, he cries about it, the whole thing, but he doesn't do tshuva. He's not chozer b'tshuva. He acknowledges he has a problem. You know, like they say, admitting you have a problem is the first step. He knows he has a problem. He doesn't deny that he did an avera, right? But he just simply doesn't stop doing it. Lamahu Domeh, what is he comparable to? It's a famous line which we know from the Rambam in Hilchot Teshuvah. La'adam shetofes sheretz biyado, shafil tovel b'chol meimot sheba'olam, lo alta lo tfila. A person is holding a sheretz, a person is holding the object which contaminates him. He goes into the mikveh in order to purify himself from the tumah while holding the defiling object. So you can go into every mikveh in the world, you're not going to become tahor, because the moment you exit the mikveh, you maintain your tumah. Zarko miado, but the minute you cast it aside, kevan shetaval be'arbayim so miyad al talo tfila. Right? You go into the smallest mikveh in the world, you go into every mikveh in the world, then you go into the ocean, you go into the sea, it doesn't work. But the minute you get rid of the sheretz, you go into the mikveh, you come out, and it works for you. You become tahor. Shne emar, a pasuk in Mishlei, umodeh ve'ozev yirucham. A person who confesses, who acknowledges, a person who confesses and acknowledges his sin, and ozev, and abandons the sinful path, will be forgiven. Mode ve'ozev yirucham. Ve'omer, nisa livavenu el kapayim, el kel bashamayim. We lift up our hearts in our hands or with our hands to Hashem. Meaning this idea that you have to, like your the work of tshuva is also connected to your hands. It's not just an emotional reversal. It's not just an intellectual reversal, right? It's you know, you can talk the talk, but you know, can you walk the walk? Here we walk. What's that old commercial? Let your fingers do the walking, right? So it's here. It's letting our hands do walking. Hands being here the symbol for action, right? You know, like remember Hakol Kol Yaakov v'Hayadayim Yidei Esav. When Yitzchak says Hakol Kol Yaakov v'Hayadayim Yidei Esav, he knows that there are two data points here. There's the voice which sounds like Yaakov, and there's the hands that feel, because Yaakov has covered his hands with the furry skin, feels like Esav. So why does Yitzchak conclude, oh, this must be Esav? As he gives him the bracha that's due to Esav. So why does he not say, there's a stira here? Sounds like Yaakov, feels like Esav, so I don't know. Or sounds like Yaakov, feels like Esav, maybe it's Yaakov. Why does he say, sounds like Yaakov, feels like Esav, it must be Esav? Because in the conflict between what somebody says and what they do, we determine the person's identity based upon their actions. Talk is cheap. And ultimately, we are judged by how we behave. We are judged by our actions. So that's the message of Hakol Kol Yaakov Yedayim Yesov. There's another pasuk that comes to mind in the context of this Gemara. That's Mi Yale Bahar Hashem U Mi Yakum Bimkom Kadsho Naki Kapayim Uvar Levav. Right? It's not enough to have a pure heart. Who's the one that can stand, who can climb the mountain of Hashem and stand in that place? Right? It's not enough to have a pure heart. It's not enough to have good intentions. It's not enough to have a clear mind. It's a person who also has clean hands, right? A person who's tocho kibaro, right? Whose intentions are reflected in how they act. That's the Balei Musar say that's the meaning of the pasuk, right? Mi yale bahar Hashem umi yakum bimkom kadsho. It's one thing to ascend the mountain. It's another thing to be able to maintain your position, right? Mi yakum bimkom kadsho. It's, you know, it's like Sisyphus, you know, rolling the rock up the hill. So, like, you know, if you try hard enough, anybody can roll the rock up the hill. The trick is keeping it there, right? Maintaining the level you have achieved the status you have attained without the natural backsliding. That's the trick. Mi yale b'har Hashem, who can go up the mountain of God? Umi yakum, and who can remain standing at that holy place? A person who can unite heart and hand, intention and action. So now the Gemara. Yeah.
Rashi in the Talmud says something different to what he says in Eicha about this pasuk. Steinsaltz points this out.
In Eicha,
the Gemara Rashi says, "Nisal Avenu El Kafayim." Should be read as if it said, "Nisal Avenu Im Kafayim," meaning that when you basically put your hands up to heaven, you also have to bring your lev up there as well. But in Eicha, what Rashi writes is almost the opposite. There he writes, what you have to do in order to pick up your heart is make sure there isn't anything in your hands that doesn't belong to you. Uh-huh. Very interesting.
Okay, that's interesting. How do we explain, where did you read that?
I'm reading that in Steinsaltz's notes.
In Steinsaltz's note. So in other words, hold on, let me just mute.
Steinsaltz has a note in which he points out that what Rashi says here isn't what he says on the actual pasuk of Megillah.
Yeah, but that's okay. In other words, that's not such a contradiction.
Of course that's okay.
No. In other words, but how do we explain that? In other words, Rashi in Eicha explains what he thinks the pshat of the pasuk in Eicha is. Rashi on the Gemara is explaining what Bracha, I'm muting you, please. Okay. I've just muted everybody. You can unmute yourself if you have something to say. That was... Who was that? Okay. Rashi in Eicha is explaining what he thinks the pshat of the posuk is. Rashi in the Gemara is explaining how he thinks Chazal read the posuk here midrashically or metaphorically. Here, as I explained, it really is im hakapayim, right? You lift your heart up with your hands, right? And that's not a contradiction. That's not a contradiction between the two things. Amdu b'tfila. You see where we are here? Amdu b'tfila. They're standing, they're davening they're doing the davening for the fast day. Moridim lifnei hateva zaken. So they choose a person to be the chazan, to be the shliach tzibur, who is, again, an elder of the congregation. V'chulei. Tanu rabbanan. Amdu b'tfila. Afal pi sheyesh sham zaken v'chacham. Ein moridim lifnei hateva. Ela adam haragil. So even if there is the Gemara, the Mishnah said you should choose a zaken. All things being equal, being a senior member of the community is, of course, a merit. But the Gemara points out, or the Braisa rather points out, that there are other qualities of a shliach tzibur that we should look for. And first it lists them, and then it unpacks and explains them. And what are these qualities of a shliach tzibur? This is talking about the shliach tzibur for the fast day, but presumably these are values to have in a shliach tzibur all the time. Sometimes, sometimes we, I was at the Kotel yesterday. We went to the Kotel. We didn't go on Tisha B'Av. Sometimes it's a little too much to go on Tisha B'Av. It's hot. You have to schlep, and it's very crowded. Even if you're not worried about Corona, it can be very crowded. But we went yesterday. It was really very nice. We haven't been there in a long time. Even at the Kotel, you go to Daven Mincha at the Kotel. And, you know, you get there and you wait a minute and there's somebody saying mincha, mincha, and, you know, 10 people gather together and then more people come and you have a minyan. And even then, here at the Kotel, you know, like, you forget what a schut it is that we can go to the Kotel. You know, and say, okay, who's a chiyuv? Who should be the shliach tzibur? Nobody wants to be the shliach tzibur. So you have to, like, push somebody to do it. But in fact, it's a great schut to be the shliach tzibur. But during the week, you know, we get, you know, whoever's willing to do it. You know, some people sometimes are saying Kaddish, so they want to do it. But in the absence of that, sometimes you have to bribe somebody or force someone into doing it. But, you know, certainly for the high holidays and for other occasions, we're a little more particular. And these are some of the values to have, or some of the qualities to look for in a shliach tzibur. Although, again, in this context, we're talking about on the fast day. So you want somebody who's ragil, somebody who's regular, somebody who is, you know, presumably somebody who is familiar with the liturgy of the fast days, which, as we saw before and as we will see again, consisted of additional brachot that were not said all year long. And therefore, you know, a person who's a competent to daven a weekday mincha might not be necessarily the best person to choose to lead the davening on the fast day if they are unfamiliar with the prayers. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, mitupal ve'enlo. Someone who has children, dependent children, but ainlo, he does not have the means to support his children. Meaning somebody who has trouble making the meet in the end of the month, making ends meet, balancing his books. V'yeshlo yegia b'sadeh, and he has work to do in the field. He's a farmer. He has fields to work, and he feels the who are we looking for? Veto rekam, and his house is empty. So he has children. He has hungry mouths to feed at home, and he's unable to do it. He has a field which he has to work, which means he's particularly dependent upon rainfall, and he doesn't have enough. The cupboards are bare. Right? He doesn't have anything at home. Right? Meaning, put somebody up who's got a lot at stake. A person like this, he's going to daven. Who davens for their parnasa better? Somebody who's got so much money he can spend $200 million for a 5-minute joyride to outer space? Or somebody, can you imagine that goes on? And not just once, but twice in 1 week? It's unbelievable. It's mamish unbelievable. I'd like to go to outer space, but I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't. It's immoral. I think it's immoral. I'm not against space exploration, but I think it's immoral that somebody should spend money like that to do this when there are people within an X mile radius, you know, who starve, who don't have enough to provide for their families. It's outrageous. So who davens more? Who's going to be a better davener for Parnassah? The person who's got, you know, $200 million to blow away, or the person who doesn't have food to put on his family's table to feed his children. So that person, that latter person, is probably going to daven with a little more kavana, and that's the kind of person you might look for in this time of drought. And what else? Ufirko na'a. The Gemara will explain what that is, so I won't do that now. Ushfal berech. He's humble. He's kind of bent at the knee, umirutsa la'am, and he's, I guess, well liked by the people. V'yeshlo ni'ima v'kol arev, and he's pleasant. He's got a nice voice. Uvaki lekrot b'torah uvenevim uchtuvim, and he's accustomed to reading the Torah and the Navi and the Ksuvim v'lishnot b'midrash v'halachot v'agadot. He's a person who learns. He's a person who can open up a sefer. Baki b'chol ha-brachot kulan, and he knows all of the brachot. He's competent in saying, presumably these brachot are not b'rei nefashot and alamichya. He's talking about the brachot that you add for the fast day. V'yahav bei rabbanan einayhu b'rabbi Yitzchak bar Ami. So after Rabbi Yehuda had listed all of the virtues of a shliach tzibur, the chachamim, they all looked into the corner, and there was Rav Yitzchak Bar Ami. He was the guy in their generation. 1 second, I'm in the middle of a sentence.
Okay, I just didn't want you to turn the page.
They turned to Rav Yitzchak Bar Ami, who apparently was the person in their time and place who fit the bill. Yes, Yehudi, what did you want to say?
Behema does not mean pleasant in this context. In this context, it's like Lekel Baruch Ne'imo Yitenu. Okay? In other words, it's a type of tefillah. It's a reference to the way this type of tefillah is. Remember Basafah?
Right. Well, that's Rashi. Rashi here says he has a pleasant voice. I was following Rashi. Rashi says, Besume Kalabe.
We can still alternative. Okay. So the Tfilah's own language is Besafah Burah Venima Kedosha, and then says, Lekel Baruch Nimo Yitain. So I think okay. He at least has an alternative that Nima has is what kind of prayer we're talking about, and not kind of person we're talking about.
Well, in other words, a person that's able to pray that way, it's also a personal quality.
I'm not saying no. Okay. I'm just saying that I think the word
I was following Rashi that we're talking about. He's got a pleasant voice that can stir the people's hearts.
And I'm following with Tfilah, which came first.
Okay. The Gemara goes on, Hainu mitupal ve'ein lo hainu beitore kam. Wait a second. We said he should be somebody who has children that he can't provide for and somebody whose house is bare, who's got nothing in the cupboard. Isn't that redundant? Aren't they the same thing? Omar of Chizda, Zeu shebeito rekam min avera. No. When we say his house is bare, it doesn't mean, like we explained, that the cupboard is bare. It means his house is bare of averot. Meaning, despite the fact that he's got hungry mouths that he can't feed, and he's got work to do in the field, which is dry because of the drought, he nevertheless is a person who is known for his spiritual virtue, for he has no sin. Otherwise, the Gemara presumes it would in fact be redundant. Omer of Chista, Zehu Shebeito Reka Min Ha'avira, Ufirko Na'a, Omer, what does it mean, Ufirko Na'a? Omar Abaye Zesh Shelo Yatsa Alav Shem Rabbi Yalduto. Pirko Perek means you know, having achieved, you know, a certain chapter of one's life. We talk about a Betula Shehigia La Pirka, a young girl who's reached. Usually, it means like marriageable age. It means when he was an adolescent, his reputation is clean. You know, this happened, you know, like now we live in this world where somebody runs for Congress, and people find on his Facebook page all the shtuyot that he did when he was a teenager. You Google it, you find whatever it is. You find all the shtuyot that he did as a teenager, and somehow this presumably disqualifies him 20 years later for running for Congress, because he did whatever he did when he was a teenager. So one of the qualities here of the Shliach Tzibur is that he shouldn't have these skeletons in his closet in case he goes up in front of the Judiciary Committee for a hearing or something. I don't know.
Are you translating Beitore Kamin Ha'avi Rashi does that there is
no, it's, no I'm not translating. That's what Rav Chisda says. Beito rekam, amar Rav Chisda, zehu shebeito rekam min ha'avera.
But it doesn't mean it's free of sin. It means it's free of an object that was obtained in some sinful way. It's not the same thing.
Maybe. So maybe it means that his record, right?
That he doesn't own.
Right, Rashi says, she'ein chamas v'gezel bebeito, right? Which actually resonates with the Gemara earlier about the Anshei Nineveh. Meaning he's not holding on to any stolen property. Right? You can also interpret it homiletically the way I did. Yehudi, I appreciate all the fact-checking, but let's try to get through the Gemara.
Yeah.
Okay? I'm aware that every single line of the Gemara that I explain can be explained in three other ways, but we don't need to explain each line in three different ways, so let's just leave it to me. So then the Gemara brings a pasuk from Yirmiyahu, which also is talking about the Shliach Tzibur. Haitali nachlati ke'aryeh Beyar. My inheritance was like a lion in the forest. Natna alai bikola. Right? It spoke forth against me. Va'al kain senetiha. And that's why I hate her. So the Gemara asks, my natna alai bikola. What does it mean that my nachala spoke out against me? Omar mar zutra bar tuvia, Omar rav, va'omri la, Omar rav chama, Omar bar, Omar rabbi Elazar. It was either this one or that one. Ze shaliach tzibur she'eno hagun hayored lifnei hateva. So what does it mean that your own voice attacks you? Your own voice speaks out against you, almost like the idea of the Fifth Amendment, right? Like, you know, you shouldn't have to testify against yourself in your own case. Self-incrimination, right? What does it mean that your own voice kind of like attacks you like a lion in the forest, right? That's someone who is not a proper shliach tzibur, who the community sends an improper shliach tzibur, maybe somebody with averot, maybe somebody with theft in his hand, maybe someone who's arrogant, you know, somebody who's not a proper shliach tzibur. I don't mean like someone who doesn't know every Karl Bach tune in the world. Right, but somebody who doesn't have the virtues of the shliach tzibur, he becomes. It's really a case of ein sanegor nase kategor, right? I'll, to flip around that, Yehudi. I'm sorry, I'm muting you because there's some noise in your background which keeps coming through here. It's a case of ein sanegor nase kategor. It shouldn't be that the shliach tzibur, who's there to represent the community, ends up being a black mark on the community because of his own lack of ethical standing or his own inability to properly articulate the prayer or something of that manner. So when that happens, when the community chooses an improper shliach tzibur, it bounces back on them. Right, the voice which is supposed to go out and rise in prayer and call down heaven's mercy ends up being the prosecuting attorney. It ends up being the voice of the lion coming back to attack the community which has sent them. Okay, I'll pause here. And hopefully we'll continue next week. I hope I don't really have any plans to go away this summer. Normally we often take a break after Tisha B'Av, but as long as people are still willing to come, I'll keep teaching throughout the summer unless something comes up here or there. I hope we'll continue learning. So we'll end here towards the top of a Tet Zayin Amud Beis, and we'll continue next week.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bakasha. Bye.
Cheers.
No computer.